Israeli forces killed two Palestinians and injured nearly a dozen more during a military operation in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. At least two killed and 19 others wounded in a terrorist attack in Syria's western province of Hama. And Russia says the Odessa missile attack hit a Ukrainian military infrastructure after Kiev accused Moscow of failing to keep its promises. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, another deadly Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank. At least two Palestinians are killed in the clashes in the northern city of Nablus. The two men were aged 29 and 22. The Palestinian Red Crescent has also reported 19 injuries, including 10 people hit by live fire. Palestinian reporters have described the raid as a full-blown military invasion. Israeli forces have also stormed the flashpoint city of Jenin. Hamas says the ongoing confrontations in the occupied West Bank prove that the Palestinian uprising will not stop until the end of the Israeli occupation. According to the movement, resistance across West Bank cities will not be broken. Israeli forces have killed at least 50 Palestinians in the occupied territories since late March. A day after the arrest of a spy network in Iran, the intelligence ministry has released new details about the group, which it says were linked to the Israeli spy agency Mossad. The ministry says the team had planned terrorist and sabotage operations in several sensitive locations, including a center in Isfahan province. It says the network's elements had received training for months in an African country and entered Iran through Iraq's Kurdistan region. They possessed advanced equipment and powerful explosives. The Iranian intelligence ministry says the team had placed their explosives in their targeted area and was arrested hours before completing their terrorist operation. The Turkish military has conducted heavy shelling on two areas in northern and western Syria, causing casualties and material damage. According to reports, the mortar and artillery fire in Zargan district have left one civilian dead and four others injured. Separate attacks also hit sites in Altamr in the western province of Hasaka, including near a Russian base. Military sources are saying there have been 80 Turkish attacks in less than 1 hour. On Thursday, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan renewed his threat to launch a military operation in Syria, allegedly to stem anti-Ankara terrorists. Damascus views Turkey's operation as violation of its sovereignty. Also in Syria, at least two people have been killed in a terrorist attack in the west. The attack, which targeted a religious ceremony, also left 19 people wounded. Here's our Damascus correspondent, Muhammad Ali, with more details.
What happened was that there was a terrorist attack on a village called Al-Suq al-Biyya, which is west of Hama and Hama countryside. The result was that two people were killed and 12 others were injured. They were taken to the National Hospital of Al-Suq al-Biyya. The attack targeted a gathering, a religious ceremony. There was an inauguration of a church over there, and there were a lot of civilians over there, women, children, over there attending that ceremony. So two people were killed over there as a result of this attack. Reports say that terrorists launched the attack from the area that they control, which is Idlib, which is controlled, of course, by the so-called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, previously known as the Al-Nusra Front over there. Reports also say, according to civilians in that area, that the terrorists used this time drones to attack that area. This is not the only attack that happened. Also, terrorists from Idlib targeted with mortar shells areas around Khan Sheikhoun in Idlib's southern countryside, which is a government-held area. Those mortars caused fire to break out in the farms around Khan Sheikhoun, but no one was injured or killed as a result of that attack.
Hungary urges the EU to change its strategies on Ukraine, saying Western sanctions on Moscow have failed.
West's strategy on Ukraine has failed as governments in Europe are collapsing like dominoes. Energy prices have surged. A new strategy is needed, which should focus on peace talks and drafting a good peace proposal instead of winning the war.
The Hungarian Prime Minister says the sanctions were aimed at destabilizing Russia's leadership in the war. He says, however, Ukraine will never win the war this way, since the Russian army has asymmetrical dominance. Viktor Orban says the war can come to an end only through peace talks between Russia and the US. Orban stressed that Hungary is unwilling to support the EU's limitations on Russian gas imports. He warned that this would undermine European economy. The bloc has imposed a wave of sanctions on Russia, targeting its key sectors. Russia's foreign ministry says its Saturday attack on the southern Ukrainian port city of Odessa hit a military infrastructure. According to spokeswoman Maria Zakharova, a naval boat was among the targets hit in what she described as a high-precision strike. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Russia of breaking its promise to implement a grain deal. With the attack on the port, Odessa is a key Black Sea terminal for the export of Ukrainian grain. The attack came less than 24 hours after Russia and Ukraine agreed with the United Nations and Turkey on reopening the Black Sea ports for grain exports. France says it will press ahead with the growth stifling austerity policies after it downgraded its economic outlook. Fears are growing more in Europe's second largest economy, as many say the Eurozone is headed into recession amid record inflation and energy uncertainty. Ramin Mazohiri reports from Paris.
Evidence continues to mount that Europe's sanctions campaign against Russia is exacerbating the euro currency's persistent and perhaps structural economic troubles. France's finance minister just released a depressing outlook. This year's economic growth will be cut almost in half and remain between just 1.4 and 1.8% until at least 2028. The Eurozone's second largest economy now looks too weak to drive what many have long called the world's most unstable macroeconomic bloc.
From 2008 to 2017, the Eurozone's average annual economic growth was just 0.6%. From 2018 through 2021, the growth rate was even worse, just 0.5%, putting the Eurozone on track for a second consecutive lost decade.
Despite the clear failure of austerity policies in producing growth, President Emmanuel Macron will continue with far-right economics in his second term. His finance minister boasted of plans to cut much-needed public spending to a 20-year low, citing a desire to submit to Brussels' entirely arbitrary 3% rule on public deficits.
We're talking about a systemic crisis in Europe, and one which existed before the crisis caused by the pandemic, as well as the crisis caused by the need to find alternative energy sources other than Russia. What it all adds up to is that a state of crisis continuing still.
This week, the new and deeply fractured National Assembly passed the Emergency Purchasing Power Bill, aimed at countering still rising once-in-a-generation inflation. At just 20 billion euros, it has been widely criticized as an ineffective and even superficial measure.
For many people, this bill is insufficient in comparison with the scope of the crisis. The same criticism has been made of a government fuel rebate of 18 cents, which began in April. However, it is 20 billion euros which will help the poorest level of society and students deal with the effects of high inflation.
France's government claims that upcoming austerity rollbacks planned for the pension and unemployment system will actually produce broad economic growth this time. The European Central Bank is raising interest rates, even though the Eurozone is already on the brink of recession. Sanctions and not diplomacy continues to be the destabilizing Western choice regarding Ukraine. The long-term economic outlook for France and the Eurozone appears bleak to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
More than 500 U.S. firefighters are working to extinguish a wildfire that has ripped through thousands of acres in California. Over a dozen properties are already destroyed or badly damaged. Emergency personnel are trying to evacuate residents and protect structures. Over 6,000 people were evacuated as the fire remained 0% contained as of Saturday evening local time. The blaze has left behind ashes, gutted vehicles, and twisted remains of property in its wake. It broke out after a heat wave swept across multiple regions, pushing up temperatures. Officials say the fire could take a week to contain. The United States has always prided itself for being the beacon of democracy and freedom. Now a civil war scenario is being presented as a possibility in the country, something that would have been unthinkable just a few years ago. Why has the American society morphed into one that sees civil war as a possibility?
From self-styled militia members and extremists online, crossover into conservative protests and even members of the Congress, the U.S. has been a scene of growing division among supporters of different beliefs and ideologies. And the U.S.'s bipartisan structure not only not helped the situation, but also further fueled the division. And while a second civil war seems inevitable, some politicians and radical groups have only made matters worse. Last year, we saw former President Donald Trump retweeting warning about a second civil war to inflame his base ahead of his first impeachment. Then we had some rioters who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th trying to stop the counting of electoral votes after the victory of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, wearing t-shirts promoting civil war while others wielded Confederate flags. And now, with conservatives in the U.S. calling for national divorce, the thought of a civil war, which seemed unlikely up until a few years ago, is no longer unthinkable to many Americans. A new study by the University of California, Davis, has found that about half of all Americans expect a civil war to occur in the next few years. The same study also showed that about 14% said they strongly or very strongly agree that a civil war is imminent. But all this raises the question as to why the U.S., which claims to be an advocate of freedom of speech and democracy, has become a prime example of division and bipartisan disputes, which have so far been costly to the American people.
And we're not quite in the 1860 situation when the last time that America was on the verge of a civil war, but we're nearing that place. Americans have decided to live in two separate alternate realities. There's one side of America that believes in truth and facts and the scientific method. There's another, a third of the country that still believes that Donald Trump won the last election, that there's a giant deep state conspiracy in place to rob them of power. This is a very powerful minority. They own most of the guns in the country, and they seem to be immune to the concept of truth. So much work needs to be done to bring the country back together.
Over to The Hague, where the International Court of Justice is set to proceed with a case concerning accusations of genocide against minority Rohingya Muslims. The United Nations' highest court has thrown out all of the objections by Myanmar's military to a case filed by the Gambia. The junta said the court has no jurisdiction in the matter. Rights groups have hailed the ICJ's decision as a great moment for justice for Rohingya. They say there is now a possibility to challenge the military's impunity. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya fled majority Buddhist Myanmar in 2017 amid harrowing reports of murder, rape, and arson. In a provisional decision 2 years ago, the court ordered Myanmar to protect the Rohingya from genocide. South Korean activists and their supporters gathered for a peace festival near the demilitarized zone. They seek an end to the Korean War and to replace the armistice with a peace treaty. The festival comes as new South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol strengthens the country's alliance with the U.S. and plans joint military drills for next month. Frank Smith has more.
South Korean peace activists gathered at Imjingak, a peace park near the border with North Korea, to call for an official declaration to end the 1950-53 Korean War. They also want the agreements made during previous inter-Korean summits to be upheld.
Let's join together, 80 million people for peace. Let's get together, people for peace around the world. Let's start today the great journey of marking the 70th anniversary of the armistice. Next year, the year of the end of the war and the first year of the peace agreement.
Peace activists traveled in groups from across South Korea to join the event. Former President Moon Jae-in had sought engagement with North Korea, but his push for an inter-Korean peace failed to materialize. Participants here want results.
We gathered here because everyone wants to keep a state of peace in the middle of this tension. We hope this will expand and be transmitted to the so-called politicians in South Korea and the world so that peace can be achieved politically.
We believe that, after all, politicians have some responsibility for the Korean Peninsula issue, but our citizens need to show some of the world's political leaders that the general public wants an end to the Korean War.
The Korean peace appeal seeks 100 million signatures to deliver to the United Nations and the warring parties next year. Frank Smith, Imjingak, South Korea.
Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Stay tuned.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
writing. Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful.
Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, July 24th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, or messages. So contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our great listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an eQSL card or an electronic QSL card from us. And here, I truly appreciate those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Victor Varzin from Russia, Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, and Dilip Kumar from India. All three are old and regular listeners. And here, I do send my warm gratitude to those of our great listeners who have sent us emails from around the world, including Alexei Kolakov from Russia, Reginaldo Enunciaso from Brazil, Tomas Kotas from Poland, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, and Hermod Pedersen from Sweden. Stay with us until the end of the program. This is Listeners Special, and as I said, we've received so many emails from every corner of the world. And I mentioned some of the names of those of our listeners who have sent us emails from around the world, but in this program, I can just read some of them, and in later programs, in the upcoming programs, I will read more emails. But at this time, Alexei Kolakov from Russia has sent us an email. Alexei Kolakov says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, thank you for an answer to my email. Is it possible to receive an EQSL via mail? I'd love to receive one from your radio station." Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran, and from IRIB English Radio to Alexei Kolakov from Russia. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Of course, my colleagues answer to all emails they have received and they receive from every corner of the world, including you, Alexei Kolakov from Russia. It's our duty to do so. And of course, they will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Alexei Kolakov from Russia, why don't you tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast? Yes, in your upcoming emails, tell us which program or programs you like the best. Alexei, thank you very much for sending us this email. We're looking forward to hearing from you soon. And from the Southern Hemisphere, from Brazil, we've received an email from Reginaldo Enunciaso. Reginaldo says, "Greetings from Brazil. My name is Reginaldo from the city of Barra Mansa in Brazil. I'm glad to tell you how much I like listening to your station, Radio Iran, and all segments in English language. I enjoy knowing more about news, information, and the culture of your beautiful country, traditions, and beautiful Iranian music. If possible, please I would like to receive some QSL postcards of your station by email, such as the beautiful nature of your country, Mount Damavand, and the ski resorts of Dizin and other national monuments. Thank you very much. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Reginaldo Enancioso from Brazil. We are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in your city, Barra Mansa, in Brazil. It's great. And we are so happy to have you as a staunch follower of this radio station, IRIB English Radio. And that's good. It made my day, your comments about beautiful Iran and IRIB English Radio programs. As you said, you like the news, you like the information about the culture of beautiful Iran, the geography, the music, the tradition, so you can follow the programs. Yes, we have broadcast different programs about the culture and about the music, about the cinema, about the market, about the economy and politics of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And you can find the archive of these programs in our website at www.parstoday.com/en. And that's great that you have information about the nature of Iran, including Mount Damavand and ski resorts of Dizin and other national monuments. And that's great. For your information, at the time of pandemic, sending any material or promotional item on behalf of IRIB English Radio to other regions of the world is not possible. So please, at the time being, accept our electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Yes, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card. Reginaldo Enancioso from Brazil. It was great. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world. Please stay with us. So, from Poland, we've received an email from Tomasz Kotas. Tomasz says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, my name is Tomasz Kotas, a DXer from Poland. Thank you for taking the time to read my report. I hope you found it useful. If this reception report is accurate and you have the time, please verify it with an electronic QSL card or email confirmation. Thank you." Salam and warm greetings to you, Tomasz Kotas from Poland. And please accept our appreciations to you for sending us this email. Of course, we will send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Write to us soon, Tomasz Kotas from Poland. And from the Netherlands, we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners, from Rob den Boyer from the Netherlands. Let's see what Rob den Boyer says. To Radio Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting, it is with pleasure that I hereby confirm your broadcast in Heinroed, the Netherlands. Please listen to the audio file attached. If this report is accepted as correct, please send me your verification. Thank you so much. Salam and warm greetings to you, Rob den Boer from Netherlands, and thank you very much for sending us this email to your favorite radio, IRIB English Radio. We are so happy that the signals of our radio are received in your region, in the Netherlands. Yes, we received your audio file, and it was great. Thank you for that. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Write to us soon. We're looking forward to hearing from you soon. Rob den Boer from the Netherlands. Welcome back. As I said, here we have an email from Hermod Pedersen from Sweden. Hermod Pedersen from Sweden says, "Dear radio friends, having realized the vast sources of radio transmitters in Iran on medium wave, I am now studying and learning a lot more about the Islamic Republic of Iran, its geography and history, all thanks to your short and medium wave stations. I'm writing as a long-time radio listener, a DXer, hoping to receive a brief note as verification or a QSL of my reception of your radio. That would be a nice memory for me. Today, in this era of more and more streaming media, I believe that traditional radio is still a great source of both information and entertainment from various parts of the world. Sincerely yours." Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, and from IRIB English Radio to you, Hermod Pedersen from Sweden. It seems that you have already received the signals of IRIB English Radio in Sweden, and that's great. Please follow us and let this interaction moves on, this mutual relationship. It seems that you've already learned about the Islamic Republic of Iran, its geography and history through IRIB English Radio broadcast, through the news, through the, you know, the series we broadcast about Iran. And that's great. So, as you said, in this era of more and more streaming media, the social media and other things, traditional radio is still a great source of both information and entertainment from various parts of the world. And that's a big treasure, as I believe. Hermod Pedersen from Sweden, we agree with you. Thank you very much for writing to your radio, IRIB English Radio. Thank you for this email. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon, and my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card, because sending a paper QSL card or any material at the time of pandemic on behalf of IRIB English Radio is not possible. So please accept our eQSL card. And before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails from every corner of the world, including Dilip Kumar from India, Victor Varzin from Russia, Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, Alexei Kulakov from Russia, Reginaldo Enunciaso from Brazil, Tomasz Kutas from Poland, Robin Boer from the Netherlands, and Hermod Pedersen from Sweden. Thank you very much for being with us. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special and IRIB English Radio. Have a good time and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
انرا مطمئن میکند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله الله يا الله والحمد لله الله ولا اله
Migration carries a great meaning. Migration from oneself towards Allah is the greatest of migration. Whoso migrates for the cause of Allah will find much refuge and abundance in the earth, and whoso forsake this home, a fugitive unto Allah and His Messenger, and death overtakes him, his reward is then incumbent on Allah. Allah is ever forgiving, merciful. Regrettably, some deviationists, some elements who do not believe in Islam, are trying to epitomize Islam in Arabism through their claims. Those are devoid of the reality of Islam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the Shi'ism. In one of his speeches, he refers that during the past century, events have occurred, each of which have some effects on the current movement of our nation. The constitutional revolution, which is the Mashruta, and the tobacco movement are highly important. The establishment of the theological center in the city of Qom in the last 50 years, its influence inside and outside of Iran, the struggles of the religious intelligentsia within the university centers, and the 1963 uprising of the Iranian nation led by the ulama and the scholar of Islam, which continues to this day, are all among factors that have made the Shia Islam an issue in the global level. This is what Imam Khomeini has said, and obviously we know that because of the Islamic Revolution, because of the uprising of the ulama and the scholars, and because of the Hawza of Qom, today we see that the words of Islam, the words of Shia school of thought or Shi'it, is being spread in the whole globe. We can see how in Nigeria after the revolution, how a scholar comes to the Qom and he learns, and after that he goes back and he spreads the Shia school of thought.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi sallallahu alayhi.
We see the services of Sheikh Zakzaki in the Nigeria. On the other hand, we can see like in India, Pakistan, or in the subcontinent, how the school, how the ulama, how the scholars are spread. And we have seen many of them being killed or being made imprisoned by the dictators of those countries. So we can see all these things. And this is because of the movements that we have. Why? Because when Imam Khomeini says that the Shiism is a revolutionary school, it means that it does not stop at a point. The other schools, they have stopped. We have seen many school of thoughts which have stopped and they do not have advancements in them. Whereas the Shia school of thought, which is a revolutionary school of thought, it has advances. The movements are changing. And every time when there is an oppression, every time when a dictator tries to oppress people, it is the Shia school of thought that raised its voices. It is the Shia school of thought that brings the revolution and which guides people to the right path and the path of justice.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Progressives have recently decried the Biden administration's approval of a nearly $1 billion weapons supports deal with the United Arab Emirates, a move that came days after an Abu Dhabi court controversially sentenced a Virginia civil rights lawyer to 3 years in prison. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Biden ripped for $1 billion UAE arms deal days after Khashoggi lawyer sentenced. Here's more. U.S. progressives have recently decried the Biden administration's approval of a nearly $1 billion weapons support deal with the United Arab Emirates, a move that came days after an Abu Dhabi court controversially sentenced a Virginia civil rights lawyer to 3 years in prison. The U.S. State Department's approval of the $980.4 million agreement for upgrades and sustainment of the UAE's fleet of Boeing C-17 Globemaster III military transport planes was announced recently, 2 days after the Abu Dhabi Criminal Court sentenced Asem Ghafoor to 3 years behind bars, a fine of over $816,000, and deportation upon completion of his sentence for alleged money laundering and tax evasion. Ghafoor, a U.S. citizen who previously represented murdered Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi and his fiancée, Hatice Cengiz, was arrested at Dubai International Airport while en route to Turkey to attend the family wedding. The group Democracy in the Arab World Now, on whose board Ghafoor serves, said recently. The U.S.-UAE deal was announced days after Biden met with and praised leaders of the Zionist regime, Saudi Arabia and the UAE. The regimes accused of perpetrating human rights violations ranging from war crimes and apartheid to the killing and persecution of U.S. citizens. It's clear that Biden isn't breaking with Trump on the Mideast, MSNBC journalist Mehdi Hassan tweeted recently, a reference to then-President Donald Trump's embrace of Arab dictators and unconditional support for the Zionist regime's right-wing cabinet. Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE. Biden is doubling down on support for them, even when they kill or detain U.S. citizens and residents, he said. U.S. lawmakers, activists, and journalists are leading condemnation of Ghafoor's imprisonment. Middle East Eye reports nearly a dozen members of Congress, including Representatives Ilhan Omar, Rokana, and Don Beyer, have demanded Ghafoor's release. I am appalled that Asem Ghafoor, American lawyer who represented Khashoggi, was detained and imprisoned in the UAE based on an in absentia conviction with no notice or opportunity to defend himself. Representative Jim McGovern tweeted recently, adding that Ghafoor must be freed and allowed to return to the U.S. Meanwhile, Cengiz said in a statement that she believes Ghafoor's prosecution was politically motivated. I have an ongoing civil lawsuit against the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, and his co-conspirators in the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. The trial begins soon, she explained, adding, Asem Ghafoor is part of Don's legal team in this lawsuit. I am concerned that the UAE has jailed Asem to intimidate the legal team and myself and anyone who calls for democracy in the Middle East. We call on the Biden administration to stand up for Asem Ghafoor and other American citizens who have been targeted by so-called allies overseas, she said. Matt Doss, who advises Senator Bernie Sanders on foreign policy, sardonically questioned the UAE's commitment to fighting the type of corruption of which Ghafoor is accused. If you believe that UAE, a global destination for kleptocrats' stolen wealth, has suddenly joined the anti-corruption fight and just coincidentally started with Jamal Khashoggi's lawyer, I very much like to invite you to my game, he tweeted. In explaining why Ghafoor was arrested, the Emirati state news outlet WAM claimed the apprehension was a result of mutual coordination to combat transnational crimes with the United States. However, U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said during a press briefing recently that the U.S. did not want Ghafoor arrested and that administration officials conveyed expectations on Emirati partners that Mr. Ghafoor receive continued consular access, that he be afforded a fair and transparent legal process, and that he be treated humanely. Price stated that we see no indication at this point that Ghafoor's detention has anything to do with his association with Jamal Khashoggi, but we are still gathering information. According to the Washington Post, the U.S. Department of Justice, when asked if it requested an Emirati investigation of Ghafoor, said the agency does not publicly comment on communications with foreign governments on investigative matters, including confirming or denying the very existence of such communications. Although the Biden administration was initially applauded for pausing arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the UAE, human rights defenders have condemned renewed deals, including the 2021 sale of tens of billions of dollars worth of Lockheed Martin F-35 fighter jets, armed drones, and munitions to the Emirati regime.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful hadith. And this hadith is a part of a very lengthy hadith in which the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam gives his advice to his companion, Abu Dharr. He mentions a lot of things to this companion, Abu Dharr, and gives him a lot of advice. A part of that hadith is something related to the etiquettes of knowledge. And the Prophet said the following, O Abu Dharr, when you are asked about something of which you have no knowledge, say, I do not know, and you will be saved its repercussions. Okay? So a lot of times, we're asked something, but we don't know the answer to it, right? But we don't want to seem ignorant, so we make up an answer. Or we kind of beat around the bush, So don't really say, I don't know, but at the same time, don't answer the question, right? So what the Prophet says, it's the best thing to do in this situation is simply say, I don't know. The Prophet then continued and said, and do not give verdicts about that which you do not know, and you will be saved from the chastisement of Allah on the day of resurrection. So not only does it have worldly repercussions, answering a question one does not know about, but in the hereafter as well, one would be punished for trying to answer something one does not know about. And this is especially true about a religious question. If somebody is asked advice or asked a question about something religious, it's best just to say, I do not know. In the same vein, and echoing the same theme, Imam Ali has been reported to have said, the scholar, the alim, the one who has true knowledge, never feels ashamed to say, I have no knowledge about this. When he does not know something, he should simply say, I do not know. This is one of the true signs of the true scholar and the true person with true wisdom and true knowledge. Conversely, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam condoned the person who tries to answer each and every question that he's asked. Imam Sadiq says, verily the one who answers every question posed to him is insane. The word that the Imam uses is lamajnoon. He is crazy. He is insane. Nobody can know every answer to every question. A normal person, barring the Imams alayhim as-salam, right? They have knowledge of everything. Of course, that God Almighty has told them about. But aside from these individuals, right? If somebody is a normal human being and has, not immaculate and not infallible, if he's asked something, it's not necessary for him to answer each and every question that he's asked. Imam Sadiq also said the following: when a knowledgeable person is asked about something he does not know, he should say, Allah knows better. And none but a knowledgeable man will say that. Right? So this is one of the etiquettes of knowledge that has been mentioned in the hadith of the Prophet Muhammad.